I'd always thought, oh, wouldn't it be great to have a pet cougar? And then as you get older, you're like, yeah, that's really not such a good idea.
Is that right? Well, tell me about it.
But I can take care of them. Someone else can pay for the food bill.
This is Jonathan Ward on KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend, Washington. Joining me by phone from Memphis, Tennessee, are Joanne Selvage and Sarah K. Larson. They are co-directors and co-producers of a film showing at the Port Townsend Film Festival, September 26th and 27th, called The Keepers. The Keepers is a behind-the-scenes portrait of the Memphis Zoo. This is not an expose about zoos, but rather it's a touching story about the complexity of our relationship to animals in captivity. Sarah and Joanne, welcome.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello. Great. Well, I'm glad you guys could join us on the phone for a preview of your movie. And first, tell us, where did you come up with this idea?
Well, this is Sarah Kay talking, mm-hmm. and we both live relatively close to the zoo. And I would take daily walks in there, and as a filmmaker, I was looking for interesting stories. And I just knew that there was something interesting there, and approached Joanne, and we talked about just going for it and trying to make a movie and see, discover a story there.
Mm. Yeah, the Memphis Zoo is, it's one of the top zoos in the country. Mm. And when you think, how are we going to make a documentary about a zoo, there are so many different angles you could take. What we decided was ultimately zoo is about animals, and we wanted to follow the people who worked the closest with the animals. And we had this idea that the zookeepers would have, you know, some sort of a love-hate relationship with their jobs. Like, they mm-hmm. love the animals, but they're having to take care of them in captivity. And it was a really interesting kind of subculture to step into, to talk with the people who are zookeepers and work with them. And in the process of raising money for the film, we did an Indiegogo campaign mm-hmm. that was very successful, and we ended up raising money from like almost 300 people, including zookeepers from 48 states.
Wow.
And zookeepers do not make a lot of money.
No.
But it really spoke to the idea that this is a subculture that's often ignored and certainly not respected and recognized for the role that they play.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say that you definitely bring that out. The animals certainly are featured in this, and there's some fascinating animals. You've got Komodo dragons, giraffes, Bengal tigers, on and on. In fact, as you said, it's quite a large zoo. There's 3,500 animals, 500 species on 70 acres, and that is featured very well in the movie, but the movie is called The Keepers, meaning referring to the zookeepers. So it's also a documentary about the people, and I found that quite touching because their lives really are intertwined, the animals and the zookeepers.
They really are, and that's what we wanted to focus, you know, what would people feel about zoos if they really looked at it through the work of the zookeepers and their relationship to the animals. And anybody can identify with how valuable it is to work in a job because you love it, and I think that's one of the strongest things that come across in that story.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah Kay is now a Memphian, but she grew up in the Detroit area, and
mm-hmm. yeah,
and Detroit and Memphis have a lot of things in common, but one of the things they don't have in common as much is the kind of super pro labor, you know, work culture of blue collar working, you know, jobs. I mean, that's certainly here in Memphis, but we live in a state that's it's a right-to-work state that doesn't always recognize unions, which is very, very different from, of course, Detroit and Michigan. So when Sarah came in, it was really fun being co-directors with Sarah Kay because we brought very kind of our cultural backgrounds are very different, and the way we saw the story unfolding was very different, and she was able to kind of continue to keep pulling it back into the context of, you know, these people love their jobs so much that they will work for almost nothing mm-hmm. because they love their jobs so mm-hmm. much. I mean, you know, who does that? And also, like, what is the value of that? And when you're making, you know, when you have a college degree and you're making minimum wage,
mm-hmm.
Just because you want to do that work. It was interesting. It was a different take on it than I would have brought into it solely by myself.
Did you decide ahead of time to do that, or in the filming did you realize that was an angle to bring out?
That's a really good question. I think we kind of did some exploratory filming, and that's something that came up pretty fast. Mm-hmm. Don't you agree, Joanne?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, yeah. It's always hard.
Not exactly before, but it
emerged. I mean, that's documentary filmmaking. Mm-hmm. You choose a subject, you know, unless it's a historical documentary, you don't go in right away with the script. You have to kind of follow your people and see what their lives are like, mm-hmm. and develop a story based on what you actually capture.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, more and more as time went on, we realized it was a portrait piece. It was about the individual kind of personalities and experiences of the people that we were following,
mm-hmm.
and their personal stories, as well as, you know, however that in different cases, it was more or less caught up in the animals that they were caring for.
Mm-hmm. I want to say, having seen it, that it is a documentary, and you very intentionally did not dramatize it. It really is a very much of a behind-the-scenes documentary about the Memphis Zoo, and it was inspiring to see how deeply the zookeepers cared for the animals, and at the same time, it was inspiring to see how deeply the animals related to their keepers, and those two are intertwined.
Oh, that's interesting.
And what better window into the animals than through the zookeepers? So how were you able to gain such intimate access into a zoo? Because I imagine zoos are probably protective of what goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah, so you hit the nail on the head. This documentary, it does have unprecedented level of access to behind the scenes at a zoo. You know, people who are familiar with lots of other animal documentaries may have seen documentaries that take place at refuges or in different locations for different reasons, but filming at a zoo is very difficult to clear, to get releases and permissions to undertake. And so luckily, you know, we're both here in Memphis. We have many relationships with people at the Memphis Zoo, and we were introduced by a board member to the CEO of the Memphis Zoo,
mm-hmm.
and we kind of took our pitch to him. We said, we're independent filmmakers. We want to make a movie about the zoo, but we want to do everything from the point of view of the zookeepers. We don't want to talk to anybody who's kind of in the administration or raises money for the zoo. We want to talk to the zookeepers. Like, we would keep it as close to the animals as possible. And,
right.
And the CEO of the zoo, this guy, Chuck Brady, he got it, mm-hmm. because he used to be a zookeeper.
Oh, no kidding.
And
wow.
And so he was willing to kind of step out of the comfort zone,
mm-hmm.
And take a risk. He knew that we were Memphians and that we were very proud of the zoo, and that by focusing on the zookeepers, that would be where our story was.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that because they're one of the top zoos in the country, they play by all of the rules. They're an accredited zoo. Mm-hmm. They don't mess up and do stuff wrong. You know, I mean, he wasn't worried that we were going to find any wrongdoing or any kind of scandalous, you know, libel, you know, things that would come back and hurt the zoo.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave us a really wide berth and trusted us. I mean, we were able to get that permission. And once we started actually shooting, you know, we were working with the communications team and the PR director, and they were totally flabbergasted because they had never worked with photographers, reporters, certainly not an independent film crew to do the kind of access that we had. There were all of the staff, like many of the zookeepers and the other workers at the zoo were stunned that we were able. There were other people that work at the zoo that weren't allowed in places where we were allowed,
mm-hmm.
to film. And so they basically had to just waive all of the media policies to allow us to take cameras into the tiger house. Nobody's allowed in the tiger house unless people who their zookeepers are allowed to work with the tigers. That it speaks volumes as to their kind of level of trust and support of independent filmmaking and of us in particular. And Memphis is a very, you know, supportive place for creatives, and I think that that was one of the reasons why we were able to do it. I really don't think we would have been able to do it anywhere else in the country.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. And I will say there was some amazing footage of the tiger cages feeding the tigers, the zookeepers interacting with the tigers in a relatively intimate way, and it was amazing to see and extremely unique and completely rare to see footage like that.
It really is. I think it's interesting to point out that the zoo doesn't allow people behind the scenes, not because they're doing anything wrong, mm-hmm. but they're always worried about public perception.
Right.
When you see these tigers, these beautiful animals, and they're the night houses, and that's what's great about our film, if I may say so, is you get to see where these animals sleep at night.
Right.
That could be upsetting to some mm-hmm. people because they don't understand that is actually totally above board. The animals love it. They're comfortable there. Mm-hmm. But just visually, mm-hmm. it can be off-putting to some people, and that's what the zoo is concerned about. But I think since we were able to connect that with mm-hmm. the zookeepers and their affection and care for the animals, I think it's easier for audiences to appreciate that or understand what's going on.
And zoos have changed so dramatically in the past 30, 35 years. Mm-hmm. We've gone from, you know, going to a zoo and seeing animals in cages out front, you know, with mm-hmm. bars.
Right.
To zoo environments where you go in and it's all open-air exhibits and much more kind of trying to give the impression that these animals are kind of roaming about free in the countryside mm-hmm. in their you know, native environment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the intent, is that you have an exhibit that doesn't remind people that these animals are in captivity.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, many of them are what they call, you know, the level one animals that are incredibly dangerous animals, like tiger, you know, any kind of big cats, the large primates,
bears.
The hippos,
yeah.
bears. Mm-hmm. And these are the industry standard ways of caring for them behind the scenes, you know, at night. You know, the bears don't sleep out on the, you know, on the grass. They go inside and they sleep inside in their little areas. And in some ways for animals in captivity, Sarah and I struggled initially with public perceptions of zoo animals. People anthropomorphize
mm-hmm,
them.
Mm-hmm.
They think, oh, the animal is sad, or they must be happy, or they're more comfortable in their outdoor environment. Well, you know, tigers live in dens. They want to go inside it.
Mm-hmm, right.
So it was interesting to see it from the perspective, you know, none of the people that we followed had any sort of kind of moral or ethical issues with the fact that their animals were locked up at night, because
mm-hmm.
it was safer for the animals and it was safer for the humans that were taking care of them.
So is there anything else that Sarah Kay or Joanna, you'd like to mention about your film and want people to know about?
Well, I know Joanna and I just wanted to say how grateful we are to the Port Townsend Film Festival for seeing the value in this film. It's not a mm-hmm. typical sensational animal documentary. It's really a quiet portrait piece, and I think it really speaks to the interesting programming of the film festival, and we just really can't wait to meet the audiences and get to Port Townsend.
And this film, let me tell people, is showing at the Port Townsend Film Festival, and the showings will be Saturday at 6 p.m. in the Starlight Room, which is a very nice venue for Saturday evening, and then Sunday morning, 9 a.m., at Key City Public Theater, and I believe also the Peter Simpson Free Cinema at 9 a.m. But Sarah Kay and Joanne, you both will be here in Port Townsend, is that right?
Yes,
cannot wait. Can't wait.
Great. Well, yep. it's a great time of year to come out here. It's a wonderful festival, so we're looking forward to having you both out here for that, and I want to thank you both so much for joining us for this interview over the phone, and we look forward to seeing you soon.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Nobody really understands the kind of bond you form to the animals.
I can't imagine getting up in the morning and not having this to come to.
So go have a good time. Enjoy yourselves. Thank you for coming to the zoo. We appreciate you.
You never really see anybody with a disability on TV.
Right, AJ. Action.
I don't know if I'm crazy, but my dream is to become a professional actor.
Oh, I was waiting on an action.
You gotta act very well, you gotta do your job right, and then you get it done, and then you can go to sleep for a nap.
I love playing the bad guy so much because I could be a real good actor to play the villain.
Ow! howdy, y'all.
This is KPTZ 91.9 in Port Townsend, Washington. Hi, I'm Mara Lathrop, and I'm here today talking about the Port Townsend Film Festival. My guest is Isla Halby, who appears in Becoming Bulletproof, director Michael Barnett's feature documentary that is going to play for three showings during the Port Townsend Film Festival. Hi, Isla.
Hi, Mara. Thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
The documentary follows the group Zeno Mountain Farm, of which you are one of the four founding members, as you make a film called Bulletproof. So who and what is Zeno Mountain Farm, and what is significant about the making of Bulletproof?
Zeno Mountain Farm is a diverse community of friends who gather throughout the year in about 9 camps. There's about 120 camp days per year, but it's not a traditional camp in that you sign up, and it is really like a group of friends, and almost like the camps are reunions. And one of them is where we make a movie each year, and nobody pays to come to Zeno. Nobody gets paid. It is this authentic group of friends that come together year after year. And we started making movies because we loved how creative it can be when you have a diverse cast. And we really found that it was more interesting to make the film, and the product was more interesting and creative when we had this diverse cast.
When you say diverse cast, what do you really mean by diverse?
Great question. We have people with all different abilities at Zeno Mountain Farm, and it's about a 1-on-1 ratio of people with disabilities and people in supporting roles, so people with cerebral palsy, brain injury, Down syndrome, cognitive impairments, traumatic brain injuries. It's a big range. It's very diverse, as well as most people are adults, but there's also some children. So it is a very diverse group. Often in the disability world, you'll see groups that are just for cerebral palsy or just for Down syndrome or just for intellectual disabilities. And we found that the diversity is more interesting to just have it be completely inclusive.
How is the making of Bulletproof special for Zeno Mountain Farm? How is it different from every film that you'd made before?
Well, we had been approached by this documentary filmmaker, Michael Barnett. He had seen some of our other movies. We'd made 10 other movies, and we'd been battering on the Western for a while. We knew it was going to be a bigger production and a little bit more ambitious, but we decided to go for it. And it was so fun to make the Western because it was just such a puzzle piece. We rented a set and went out to Pioneertown, this Western set in California, and got costumes from Universal, you know, and every bow tie that we rented was going to be $700 if we didn't return it. I mean, we just really stepped up our game in terms of our filmmaking and had a really professional crew and was able to just show through the film that it's such hard work to make a film, but to participate in something that you just really pour your heart and soul in, it's such a gratifying experience. And the whole integrated team got to really have that experience. You know, often people with disabilities don't necessarily get as many opportunities for meaningful contributions or meaningful work. And to make a movie and film 12 hours a day and have it be, you know, just get into all these ridiculous situations and million takes, but then to be able to show your friends and to bring it around the country was so satisfying and special. And to really share the talents of the actors with and without disabilities.
And so you said that you guys were approached by Michael to make a documentary about you guys making a film, right? How did his participation impact things? I mean, you're talking about a project where there were two completely separate film crews doing two completely different things, right?
Exactly. And we were skeptical. You know, he approached us, and it took us about a year of meeting with him to kind of decide to let those guys in because it's an intimate environment. You know, people are caring for each other in an intimate way, and it's a small grassroots organization. You know, we raise all our money, and we just weren't sure, but things sort of turned the corner when he decided that we wanted to make up a contract with it. All the benefits, all the money from the documentary, once people were paid back, would go back to Zeno Mountain Farm. Mm-hmm. And that started to click that he was a really great guy to work with, and we just started to really build some trust. And we were nervous for sure, but after about the third day, it just was seamless. The crew was really integrated, and I have this wonderful image of his doc crew behind the camera and then moving their head to the side to crack up laughing at whatever was happening mm-hmm. in our shooting of our film and then moving back. So they very much became part of the crew. And that's kind of what happens with Zeno, is that once you're there and you're in this bubble, you lose yourself and become part of the fun and the joy and the creativity that is created when you gather with this diverse group. and try and accomplish something like making a movie, which is really hard.
And because making a film is really hard, and there you were in the throes of filming your fictional story, right? What was different about it, because at the same time you were actually the subject of a documentary?
Yeah, completely. Well, it helped us to kind of really get down to the philosophy about making these movies, what we are really doing and why we do them. We like to make creative art, but also, you know, as one of the subjects AJ said in the film, he doesn't want to be pitied for having a disability. He just wants to be understood. And people with disabilities aren't necessarily understood or their experience because they're not in the media. They're not in pop culture and mass media. They're not in movies and TVs and ads. And they're not portrayed accurately. You know, it's often somebody without a disability playing somebody with a disability. So I think that's what we really wanted to have, is that to show this authentic inclusion, this kind of radical inclusion of people with disabilities acting as actors, and what that looks like. And we feel like it's actually, the product is better.
In Becoming Bulletproof, we get to see people in front of the camera and also what's going on in their lives off screen. I'm thinking in particular about one scene where one of your actors was really, really having trouble with his lines. And
yes.
The shot stayed with the whole thing from him struggling to him succeeding. What does something like that on screen mean for you guys and mean for other people to be able to see, you know, how somebody pushes through something as hard as what he was doing?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent scene to talk about. I think it shows that, you know, when the environment is a can-do environment and you're looking at what people can do, and the basic is understanding and collaboration and belonging, that people really get a chance to step into their power and into their abilities. And someone like the man you talked about in the movie isn't given that many opportunities to do that and to work through that and to step up and to share of himself. And he has a lot to share, as you see when you see the movie.
Was the experience that you had in the making of Bulletproof and the making of Becoming Bulletproof simultaneously, what did you think it was going to be, and how did that turn out to be the case, and how was it different?
The movie has just turned out exceeded all of our expectations, the documentary Becoming Bulletproof. We were going to make this Western someday anyways, and I'm just so impressed with the way they have been able to really tell the story of Zeno and capture what we've been able to kind of target at Zeno, which is that it's such a basic human need to have love and belonging and friendship, right?
Right.
But when you talk about it with people with disabilities in our culture now, it's like the most innovative and progressive idea, really, that authentic inclusion. So that's what we've experienced at Zeno, is that there's a lack in our society for this chance for inclusion and in real, you know, real relationships and chance to make meaningful contributions. And we've been experiencing this at Zeno right along. But the way that they were able to capture that and do it with such a fun subject, which is this Western that's silly and mm-hmm. also serious, I think really, we were just really amazed. It's such a beautiful movie. I feel so proud to be a subject and to be associated with this amazing movie.
In Becoming Bulletproof, towards the end of it, we get to see all of you at the premiere of your film, Bulletproof. There's some lovely moments in there, and it was really one of my very favorite parts of watching the film. How was seeing Becoming Bulletproof for the same time? How was that for you guys? Did you all get together to watch it for the first time the way you did Bulletproof?
They came to our camp in Vermont and showed the documentary. And I agree, that final sequence where you see the premiere of our movie gets me every time.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't get old, because it is that universal human experience of being part of something bigger than yourself. And to get to enjoy the fruits of your labor and all you contributed to it. So it was really fun. We got to show it in our big theater barn here in Vermont. Everyone was just so excited and proud. And it really has, the success of the movie has been blowing us away. It's also a grassroots movie. You know, it's just been plodding along and doing well at all these festivals. And we've been so excited by the ride and all the opportunities it's given for our crew to travel and meet people and advocate for themselves. You know, at the Hollywood premiere, AJ, one of the main subjects, is a guy that he's dying for people to talk to and network with in his life outside of camp and outside of this documentary. And at that premiere, there was a line of people around the entire screening room that just wanted to meet him. and to talk to him about his experience. And that really stood out to me, that, that this is what this movie can do. You know, it can really help share this philosophy of Zeno on such an exponential scale that we never thought possible until we made this documentary.
How can people find out more about Zeno Mountain Farm?
Zeno Mountain Farm, we have a website, zenomountainfarm.com. And then to contact, all the contacts are on the website. You can also see some of our other movies there. And the best way would be to come to a screening of this movie. We're going to L.A. and Port Townsend and all over the East Coast and meet, because we will have the whole cast and crew. I mean, you say there's a party or there's a festival, and trust us, our phones are ringing off the hook with people that want to participate. And there will be a big crew at all these screenings,
and
with some of the actors with disabilities and without.
I understand you guys are going to be in Port Townsend for the film festival. You get here next Saturday.
That's correct.
And
yep,
so
and
who
we'll
all
be with
is coming?
Peter Halby, myself, Isla Halby, and then Jeremy Vest, who is one of the subjects in the film. And he's also one of the leads in our movie. He's a great guy. He's very engaging. He's unforgettable. He has 5,000 friends on Facebook. So I'll just say that much. You won't forget him.
I understand you're going to have three screenings of this while you're here during the festival. The first one is on Saturday, September 26th at 6:15 at the Rose. And the second one is going to be on Sunday, the 27th at 12:15 p.m. at the Rose. And the third one, we don't know where it is yet, right? But people can check with the Film Fest schedule and the boards that they have every day about changes. And it should be easy enough to find out when it is. Also, it'll be on the website.
Yeah, they just added a third showing, so we're so excited about that.
Well, there's quite a buzz about it here in town, I can tell you that. Thanks for talking to us today, Isla. And I'm going to be seeing you around the film festival. It's a small town.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
This is Mara Lathrop, and you're tuned to KPTZ at 91.9 FM, located in historically significant, scenic as all get out, Port Townsend, Washington.
We represent a diverse community of actors that move and think and talk and act in ways that are unique.
For me, I just love to be the entertainer.
When I'm acting, I get to come out of my comfort zone. We're just people making movies.
I love acting a lot. To me, the most powerful thing about acting is just translating the human experience.
That's a wrap!